Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Bird, joined as always by our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
So it's been a while since we recorded, Jason. Since we last recorded, spring training has really gotten into full swing.
Yeah, it has. The Indians, I don't think they've lost a game since we last recorded.
Something that hasn't changed since we last recorded either is
Spring training doesn't matter.
What's that?
Spring training doesn't matter.
Yeah, spring training doesn't matter. Still doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. No, Irvin Santana still unsigned.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the big Irv. He's still hanging in the breeze out there.
Yep. Big Irv, not on a team yet. There were some rumblings this weekend that that Big Irv was going to either be signing with Baltimore or Toronto or my favorite, the mystery team.
Good old mystery team. Well, now that Chris Medlin got hurt, the Braves have entered the fray, perhaps.
Ooh, what an interesting place. How great would Atlanta be? And you figure Irvin Santana, you know, he's looking for that 1 year, $14 million, just that qualifying offer deal. He's not going to get that big, like, $100 million contract anymore. Right. What a great signing, a 1 year, $14 million deal. You know, if your season ends up going down the tank, trade him at the, you know, trade him at the All-Star break.
Yeah.
If he pitches like he did 2 years ago, just, you got him for 1 year, just let him go at the end of the season. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, according to, I'm trying to find the gentleman's first name, but I don't think they actually used it in the article for some reason. Anyways, MLB Trade Rumors is reporting that not only has Chris Medlin gone down with an injury, but Brandon Beachy left today's start with bicep tightness.
Ooh, yeah. And his velocity, I guess, his velocity hasn't been great this spring either. He's been sitting around like 86, 88, I guess, where usually he's pumping like low 90s.
Well, and here's the other factor. The Braves are picking number 26, but they've already gotten number 32 back for losing Brian McCann to the Yankees.
Oh.
So, I shouldn't say back. They gained pick number 32 after losing McCann to the Yankees. So, they wouldn't be penalizing themselves too much.
Which would be a positive.
Yeah, that would definitely be a positive. So maybe the Braves, man, maybe they're the ones that are going to finally put this to bed.
I think these arm injuries are definitely making it much more of a realistic possibility. I mean, you figure Atlanta, who seems to be pretty cash conscious as far as, you know, like they're locking up all these players, you know, through their arbitration years and, you know, a year or two into free agency. They like to know how much money they're going to be spending. You know, they've seriously tightened in the reins on their budget since the, you know, Ted Turner years. You know, a 1 year, $14 million deal might make a lot of sense to them if they think they have the team to go out there and compete now, which I would assume that they would think that they're going to be competing in the East.
Right. Right. I mean, they traded for Zach Stewart as like a fallback, but if you can get Irvin Santana for the right price, like you said, if you can get him for that 1 year deal and you only drop six slots in the draft, sounds like a pretty good solution to me.
Yeah.
I guess that's the question, though, is can they get him on the one-year deal? Or is he going to try to hold out?
No, everything I've read, it seems like he's just willing to settle for that one-year, you know, $14 million deal and just kind of, you know, try and parlay this season into that big contract.
Yeah. According to Ken Rosenthal, the Orioles' last offer was 3 years in the $27 million range, and the Twins made a $30 to $33 million offer that's still on the table as of last night.
Ooh, Minnesota.
Yeah, so, but to your point, that's cutting his value in half, you know, if he thinks he's worth at least $14 million. Taking a three-year deal for almost $30 million, that's not a good cut for him.
Right, yeah. I mean, do you want the years or do you want the money. I mean, it seems like nowadays all the players want the years.
Right.
I'll be curious to see what he does. That'll be interesting. Well, I think it's time to move on to the meat and potatoes of our show, Jason. What do you think?
I think so. I think we've beat Ervin Santana to death here today.
Yep. Enough about Ervin Santana. Unless he signs in Pittsburgh, then I think we're probably done talking about it.
No, they spent their money on Edinson Volquez.
Oh, don't worry. We'll get to Edinson Volquez, Jason. You'll have your time to gloat.
Oh, good.
So, on today's show, we're going to be talking about Pittsburgh. We're going to be talking about Cleveland Spring. We may even, Jason, talk a little bit about what's going on in Detroit Spring, because we have a few former Erie Seawolves playing with the big boys this spring.
Yeah.
So we'll see if we can squeeze some Eugenio Suarez in at the end of the show. So let's start off with Pittsburgh, and we're going to start off talking about one of my favorite players, Chase D'Arnaud, who was outrighted to AAA Indy after being DFA'd. So basically, he's still on the club, not in the 40-man roster. Nobody wanted to take a shot on him because of his injuries and his lack of production. So it looks like Chase D'Arnaud is going to be back with the Pirates in AAA Indy. I guess always good to have a backup shortstop down on the farm, even if you're feeling okay with Jordy Mercer and Clint Barmas.
Definitely want to have other options at that position.
Right. And I just like Chase D'Arnaud. Actually, one of my old family friends, she and her husband retired down in Florida for the winter. So they actually stay down in Bradenton. When got Chase D'Arnaud's autograph, she mailed a bunch of autographs up to me from the little Pirates Day that they had down there the other day. Thought that was really nice of her. Big shout out to Mrs. Shade. Thanks for the Chase D'Arnaud autograph. I got Jameson Talion's too. I was really excited about that one.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I got Talion with his number 76 he put on there. the old 76, the old rookie number.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll be wearing that a lot.
Yeah. So, Jason, let me ask you this now that we're gonna transition to talking more about what's been happening in the spring. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much would you say spring training numbers matter?
Zero.
What if 10 is the least and 1 is the most?
What is your obsession with that?
I just like asking.
I think you ask me that every time. 11.
11, okay.
Like Spinal Tap.
That's what I always think of. Yeah. It goes to 11.
No, it's actually not. It wouldn't be 11 in that case. It would be like 8, actually, because it matters a little. Like, I mean, you don't want to see people stink, you know? You want them to be doing well when the season starts. But, I mean, really, it doesn't matter. All that matters.
Yeah, I mean, and that was one of the points I wanted to bring up, too, because I think it matters just in that you can see things in the spring. You know, you can see if there's fastball velocities that are down, or, you know, if a slider suddenly isn't breaking as much as it used to, or if a guy just can't hit his spots, or if just a guy that's not turning around on fastballs like he was. Like, that kind of stuff you can see, and it, you know, there's a chance that it maybe is reflected in the numbers. But, you know, you also have to remember that they, you know, teams are just starting to send out their minor league players from camp, you know, and reassigning them, you know, within the last few days. So there's a lot of guys that are throwing against major league caliber hitters that, aren't going to see the light of day during the season.
Yeah, I think, like, last week the Indians had Travis Banwart start a game.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right, yeah. Like,
no one knows who that is. I don't even know who that is. I don't know where he came from, and every time he comes, he gets smoked. Like, he's not part of their minor league system at all. I don't know where they picked him up, but
right.
It's not good. And if you hit a home run off him, you shouldn't feel that good about yourself. You shouldn't.
You shouldn't feel... What if I hit a home run off him? Could I feel okay about that?
Yeah.
Nope, even I couldn't feel good about it.
I mean, you could, I guess.
I'd feel pretty good about it. I'm not gonna lie. Were you ever like one of those? You know, like I played baseball my whole life, and you know, I fancied myself as a pretty decent baseball player when I was younger. And we used to always have that discussion of, do you think you could ever hit a home run just accidentally off somebody? You know, like a major league pitcher in a major league ballpark. Do you think it's possible? You think you could hit a home run off somebody, like a BP home run?
You or someone else?
You. Do you think you could do it?
No.
You don't think you could? I think I could.
Are we talking about? When you say BP home run, that and major league, that's two different things. I mean, like batting practice is like, I don't know.
Like an 80-mile-an-hour fastball.
Batting practice is like AAA high school kids.
Right, yeah. Like an 80-mile-an-hour fastball. You think you could yank one down the line at Yankee Stadium?
Yeah, probably. But, I mean, if you're talking about, like, can I accidentally hit a home run off Danny Salazar? No, I don't think so.
No, yeah, no, no. No, I don't think I could either. I don't think I'd even want to step in the box. I'd be like the Henry Rowan Gardner in Rookie of the Year, just standing in the back corner.
Yeah,
just terrified.
Just wait till you get to bat against like Clayton Kershaw or something.
Wouldn't even do it. So
out of the box.
So can we say I think we're both in agreement at how much spring training matters number, which is ultimately they mean nothing.
Right.
They're like that show Whose Line Is It Anyway?
It means
the points don't matter. They don't count in the end. But I mean, it does matter in the fact that when you're looking at player performance, you should be looking at more how players are, you know, swinging and throwing and things like that instead of what the numbers look like at the end.
Right, and I think, and we've talked about this before. I think there's something to be said for, you know, promoting a player when they have momentum. Or having momentum coming out of spring training. You know, it's like if Lonnie Chisenhall is just like absolutely tearing the cover off the ball in spring training, that would probably be a good time to make him your everyday third baseman and just let it ride and see how it goes when he's confident. A bad time to promote Lonnie Chisenhall is probably right after he goes like 3 for 44.
Yeah.
Because he's probably not really feeling it at that point.
not a great time.
So it's like it doesn't matter, but you know, I think it does. You know, doing well in spring training, I think, certainly makes transitioning to the season easier. But it doesn't matter,
right? Yeah. No, I'm definitely. Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think we have. And we talked about this last season too. I don't think you should ignore spring training numbers as long as you're just looking for something more, a little bit deeper than just what their batting average and home runs are in the spring. Which, you know, again, that kind of parlays into what we're going to be talking about next. Like, Russell Martin just hit his fourth home run of the spring. Like, does that mean I think Russell Martin's going to go out and hit 30 home runs this year? No. But it's nice to see that he's coming out and he's swinging well and, you know,
right.
No one's overwhelming him with fastballs all of a sudden. Like that kind of stuff is reassuring.
Sure. So what about Gregory Polanco's?
Oh, Gregory Polanco. This is my reward for having to deal with like the ghost of John Van Benskoten and Brian Bullington and Daniel Moskos and all those other first round draft picks that turned into nothing for us. I mean, it's been 20 years, Jason, and I finally feel like I've been rewarded with being excited about minor league players. You know, I've been hearing my whole life, it's always been like, this guy's the next. It started with Kevin Young. Kevin Young was going to be the next Frank Thomas. That's what I remember as a kid. Everybody's like, oh, Kevin Young. And then it was J.R. House. Yeah. And then J.R. House still hunt. I go to Altoona, and they got a big banner with his name on it. I can't escape him anywhere. Yeah. So now we're being rewarded in the farm system, the fruits of our labor, with some players like Gregory Polanco, who's having a great spring so far.
But
what's that?
But it doesn't matter.
Right, it doesn't matter. But again, it's good to see, like, hey, this is a guy who's going up there, and he's hanging in there with everybody that's throwing at him.
Right.
And he's having the thing that I like to see, again, that goes looking at, you don't just want to look at spring training numbers, you want to look at them a little deeper. He's having great at-bats. I mean, he's working pitchers deep in counts. His first at-bat of the spring was a fastball low and away. He took it, I think it was probably more dead center than it was opposite field. But, you know, just went with the pitch, got his arms out there, drove the ball. I mean, it was a beautiful swing. Now, obviously, when someone comes out, no matter who the team that the player is playing for, everybody's going to start chirping like, oh, Gregory Polanco, when is he coming up? And I don't think there's any real incentive for Pittsburgh to bring him up at the start of the season. You know, like kind of like with Pedro Alvarez a few years ago when they brought him up, you know, Pedro Alvarez hit his Super 2 status. So he had arbitration a year early this year.
Right.
You know, Polanco's only 22 years old. What's the rush? You know, keep him down there. If he goes and he's tearing it up in AAA Indianapolis and he forces you to call him up, okay, well, you know, let's have that discussion at that point. But I don't think this spring is selling anybody in Pittsburgh on Gregory Polanco starting the season any more than, you know, his Dominican League winner, which was also fantastic.
But I mean, isn't the rush that you don't have a right fielder?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you wanted to put a rush on it, you could. I'm fine with, let's throw out, you know, Jose Tabata's numbers are not like all-star caliber, but they're not terrible. I mean, people treat Jose Tabata like he's just like chopped liver. I mean, Jose Tabata's putting up okay numbers. They're not great, but they're not horrible. And I think the problem was everybody just got so conditioned to hearing like, oh yeah, we got Jose Tabata in this trade. You know, he's like, the Yankees have been touting him as the next Manny Ramirez. Like, that's not a Jose Tabata problem. That's everybody else's perception of Jose Tabata's problem.
Right. I mean, the Pirates never seemed to give him a consistent chance, even last year when they still didn't have a right fielder.
Oh, yeah, no, he spent part of last year down in the minors.
It doesn't seem like the Pirates are sold on Jose Tabata either.
No, well, and he has his list of attitude issues as well. I mean, he doesn't have the most sterling reputation. But, I mean, if you look at his triple slash for the tenure of his major league career, I mean, just take a just complete blind guess. What would you say his triple slash is over his – he's had 1,500 plate appearances.
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, I don't watch him enough to know. I mean, he probably doesn't hit over 270, right?
274.
Well, that's close. So I'd say 270, 300, 330.
274, 339, 385.
What was the last number?
385. That's an OPS, a 723 OPS, if you put it into context like that.
Right.
Last season, his OPS plus, which is adjusted to the ballparks with 100 as league average. His OPS plus last year was 119. 2011, it was 101. 2010, it was 103. He's only had 1 year, 2012, where his OPS plus has been adjusted under 100. I mean, he's not awful. You know, he's never been out there for a full season, like you said. You know, the most plate appearances he's seen was his rookie year, 441 plate appearances. Since then, it's been 382, 374, 341.
Right.
I mean, but when people are saying, like, oh, we need to rush Polanco up here because we don't know what to do in right field, throw Tabata out there, throw Snyder out there, throw Lambeau out there whenever you need to, and let Polanco – make sure that when you call Polanco up, he's ready to be called up. That would be my approach, I guess, from a personnel perspective. You don't need to start Polanco's clock any sooner than you have to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the Pirates are at that point where they have to balance between competing and continuing to build for the future.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely. Yeah, and Pittsburgh's one of those clubs that kind of, like you said, I mean, they have to build internally because, as you saw this offseason, $5 million on Edinson Volquez probably isn't going to put you over the top. So you're going to need your guys, which a seamless transition, Jason, yeah. into our next player of point, Jameson Taillon, who was reassigned to AAA Indy today. Alan Hansen.
He's not coming up either, huh?
What's that?
He's not coming up either.
Not to start the year. Alan Hansen, our top infield prospect, he was also reassigned to AA Altoona, so he'll be back in the Eastern League. So hopefully we'll get to put some eyes on him this season again.
Yeah.
But Neil Huntington said, and this is a direct quote from PittsburghPirates.com, he said, "Guys we project as starters in the minor leagues are always quickest to get sent out because we need to get them throwing 90 to 100 pitches when their season starts." So, you know, and basically Taillon echoed the same sentiment, which, you know, he said it's not fun being sent out of camp, but he needs to basically go get his innings and get ready for a season because going one or two innings in relief isn't going to build up his arm. You know, he needs to start getting stretched out with five or more innings in his starts before he's ready to start, you know, the AAA season.
Yeah, at this point, you just kind of start running out of innings for guys.
Right, exactly. So, you know, and Taillon is in the same, I think, situation as Gregory Polanco and the same situation that Gerrit Cole was last year. You know, when we had the same discussion last year about Gerrit Cole at the beginning of the season. Everybody wanted Gerrit Cole. And Pittsburgh was patient, sent him down to Indy, and he didn't overwhelm people at Indy. You know, he put up decent numbers, but, you know, nothing that you would, you know, would signify that he was going to come out of the gates just rip-roaring and ready to go. So, you know, again, I think you just have to kind of trust the front office and trust their motives and, you know, they've got their plan in place and that's basically all you can do. So Clint Hurdle stated that, the questions going into the season are the right field, and first base options, which was the next big point.
Thanks for stating the obvious.
Yeah, right.
Manager like, role.
Like we didn't know that. You know, and it's the same stuff that we've been talking about for a couple weeks. You know, you've got your outfield spots with Jaff Decker and Travis Snyder and, you know, Jose Tabata and Andrew Lambeau. And then you have Andrew Lambeau, you know, in that potential platoon situation with Gabby Sanchez. Which I still think, you know, even if you're getting Kendrys Morales at a discounted rate, I really think if you're Pittsburgh, just go with Lambeau and go with Sanchez. You know, Sanchez is going to be fine against lefties, and Lambeau's killed righties in the minors, so you're just going to kind of have to hope that some of that translates. But I think that's just a better decision than locking yourself into a deal, you know, in the short or long term with Kendrys Morales.
I guess. I've never been a Lambeau fan. I think I've made that pretty clear.
Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah. It's pretty easy to pick out his warts or what his perceived warts are going to be, you know, if he ends up in that position from the beginning of the season. I mean, if you're a team like Pittsburgh, though, you've got to give them a shot and just see whether that translates. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, at this point, I think you're just better off going with that than you are going out and overspending or spending at all and giving up a draft pick to bring in a guy like Kendrys Morales. I mean,
what if
I
would sign Kendrys Morales after the draft?
Yeah, I mean, if he's still out there, sure. At that point, all right. Well, whatever. But, I mean, I would be willing to wager at the end of the season that Andrew Lambeau and Gabby Sanchez are more valuable than Kendrys Morales, that a platoon between those two is going to provide you more value than Kendrys Morales will.
Oof, I don't know. It depends what Gabby Sanchez you get.
What, you know what you're going to get with Gabby Sanchez. He's going to kill lefties. He's going to be awful against righties. And that's why you're just looking for that platoon mate. I mean, Gabby Sanchez has like a career 300 line against lefties. You know, he can't do anything against, he's helpless against righties.
Right, but I mean, the problem is when you're the left-handed side of the platoon, there's not a lot of at-bats out there for you.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know how much he's, you know, I mean...
Whether he needs those consistent at-bats, you mean?
I just don't know how much he's going to be contributing to the platoon.
Yeah, I mean, right. It's not going to be the majority of at-bats. He's on the short end of the platoon.
Right, I'm saying two-thirds of the platoon is going to come from the other person, the one that we're not sure about.
Right, yeah.
So I don't know. I wouldn't feel comfortable about Gabby Sanchez and a platoon partner as my first baseman when I'm trying to chase the pennant.
Yeah, I guess those are the tough decisions that a small market team has to make, man.
I don't know.
We're gonna see this season, that's for sure. We're gonna see the savvy of Neil Huntington's front office.
Hopefully.
Or lack thereof, depending on which side of the fence you're on, I suppose.
Hopefully that's what we're gonna see.
Which again, another perfect, seamless transition into our next topic, Jason.
Ah, so good.
You're just loving this, aren't you? Edinson Volquez.
Oh my goodness. My favorite.
Oh yes. Yesterday just got shellacked. Now let's not overreact because Jason, it is only spring training.
Yeah, but what are you saying about people that looked good?
Yeah, he did not. And he, like, part of the reason, and it seems like some of it was just a comfort thing, because Tony Sanchez kind of fell on the sword after the game and said, like, oh, he was uncomfortable on the hill because, you know, like, we just weren't communicating clearly. And he said, you know, there was a lot of time in between pitches, and, you know, he just – never really let him get into a groove back there. And Sanchez said that's one of the things that he needs to work on is his rapport with Volquez as well. But there's no tiptoeing around it. He did not look very good.
That sounds bogus.
That sounds like a guy that you want behind the plate if you're a pitcher, like a guy who's willing to take the heat for you.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't doing very good, so I made him nervous.
Yeah. So that's $5 million.
Hey, it's early, man. You'll get a lot of starts like that.
Yeah, well, we're about to find out. Well, the last thing before we transition to Cleveland.
I mean,
let's
go back to Edinson Volquez first.
Oh, no. Oh, I knew you were going to do that. What do you want to talk about, Volquez? Come on. What? Get it out.
Oh, it's just, it makes my brain hurt. I don't know what they were doing. They're gambling on Wandy being healthy. I mean, I don't have very much confidence in Wandy pitching a full season.
No, I mean, I wouldn't feel super confident with his arthritic elbow and forearm issues and all that either.
And now Burnett's in the land of cheesesteaks.
He's moved on to greener pastures.
And so now you got Morton and Francisco Liriano and Cole and Volquez. And who else am I? Wandy.
Right.
So, I mean,
And this is where Pittsburgh's been talking about all spring, how they love their young guys, because Pimentel has to, you know, this is Pimentel's year. He has to stay on the roster this season because of service time. So Pimentel is going to be up. They have their guys from last season that they absolutely fell in love with and that they can't talk about enough. They love Brandon Compton. You know, they think Brandon Compton's going to be you know, a staple in their rotation in the future. They have Jeff Locke, who you're hoping can recapture whatever it was in the first half of last season.
Whatever that
And then, you know, you have Filthy Phil, our good friend Filthy Phil, hopefully coming back from injury as well. So, you know, you take a look at it, and I mean, I feel like they have enough contingency plans in place where when they're trying to fill those fourth and fifth spots in the rotation, they have enough guys to slot in there.
But so here's the question. Does Edison Volquez make this team?
Yes, because they paid him $5 million.
Exactly. So, they're going to give him a chance, right? Because they're going to give him about 5 million chances. I mean, they're not going to – how bad a spring would he have for Compton to take his spot?
But I don't know. I think it would have to bleed over into the regular season. I just don't see any way that they would do it during the spring after spending that money on him.
Yeah, I agree. That's sad. Moving on.
Yeah, I kind of wish you hadn't brought that up, because I was ready to transition on to my much happier and now I'm just kind of depressed about Edinson Volquez again.
Good. Mission accomplished.
Thanks for my weekly reminder of that. As if the text messages and the letters weren't enough, now I got to get it on the podcast too.
Well, I mean,
sending me little with sympathy cards with a picture of Edinson Volquez on in the mail is not cool.
You're baiting me by sitting there and telling me how we're going to see the genius of Neil Huntington this season.
I hope Volquez wins the Cy Young.
I hope he does too.
You can hope that because you know it's never going to happen.
Exactly. I know. There's no way that's going to happen. Clayton Kershaw's in the National League. That's never going to happen.
Jeez.
So tell me about your boy, Starling Marte.
Please allow me to wax poetic about Starling Marte for a moment. Because one of the things that you love to hear is how players are making adjustments. And Starling Marte has said this spring that he's working to make adjustments. And what do they always say? And I always say this backwards because I think I might be mildly dyslexic. You don't walk your way off the island, right? That's what they always say down in the Dominican.
Right.
And Starling Marte lives by that. And Manny Sanguin last year was like, yeah, he's just an aggressive hitter. Like, it's funny to hear all these Latin players that are like, yep, they just like to swing. And that's what Marte said. Marte said, I'm an aggressive hitter, but he's going to do his best to try and get more walks. Because after last season, in lieu of taking walks, he took 26 hit-by-pitches. Which, like, one of them, we know, because we had a nice long rap session with Dr. Garrett about it.
Yeah,
left a nice little contusion on his hand. So I don't think you want your leadoff hitter necessarily taking all of those pitches.
That's the Craig Biggio approach.
Yeah, and they don't let you wear the armor like they used to when Craig Biggio played.
Yeah.
So
you want him to just watch?
Wait, what? Marte?
You want him to just watch pitches go by? Because he thought he's either supposed to swing at him. He thought he was supposed to hit them or get hit by
them. Or get hit by them? Yeah.
He thought those were the only two options.
Please, just take a look at a couple. Let them go. I don't know. I mean, again, to keep his on-base steady, and I think that's where the deflation in people's perceptions of Marte will happen this season. If he doesn't figure out a way to adjust for those 26 hit-by-pitches, which he's probably not going to take again this season, he's got to find another way to get on base. So it's good to hear him say, I guess, that he's working on his approach.
It's good to hear him bring it up.
It's reassuring, yeah. At least he's thinking about it. He's honest with himself. There's nothing worse than lying to yourself.
At least he wrote it on his hand to remember to say it to the reporter.
He's like, what's that thing I need to talk about? Oh, walks. Right, yeah. That thing. Well... That's it.
Have someone explain to him what a walk was.
Yeah. Jason, what's going on in Cleveland?
Well, in Cleveland, the Indians lost their first spring training game and then rattled off 9 wins in a row.
Wow.
They think it's still last September. And then they played like a 14-inning game where they ended up with a tie. So their official record is 9-1-1.
Yeah, Pittsburgh got one of those against Tampa. They played 14 innings in the tie, though?
I don't know. I think it was. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
It was a lot.
Pittsburgh was, it was 10 innings. They agreed to go. If they were tied after 10, they agreed that would that it would be a tie.
Hold on. Let me, I won't bring up the article because it'll just clog up my computer because the Plain Dealer's website's awful, but maybe I can just get the, let's see here.
You need the Titusville Herald's box score.
It was 10 innings, yeah.
10 innings, okay, yeah. I was going to say, that's usually like pretty par for the course with the spring training games.
Yeah, so, anyways, things are rolling along pretty good in out in Goodyear. Old Tito's got everybody playing well, and he's doing the old Tito routine where everything's positive. Not a negative word comes out of Goodyear these days. The Plain Dealer, though, likes to talk negative about the Indians' plan with Danny Salazar because they have nothing better to do.
Right.
Salazar, of course, you know, had his great 10 starts last year, started in the American League wild card game, and he has had his share of arm injuries over his career, so the Indians have always, not always, but for the last maybe 3 years, have really been babying Salazar and gently nudging his innings up each year, and last year represented a huge bump in innings pitched. So the Indians, I think, wisely said, like, well, we could slot Danny Salazar in as our number five starter coming out of spring training, and we don't need a number five starter until the second week of the season.
Ooh, clever.
So we could start Danny Salazar 2 weeks later in spring training and give him 2 weeks off. And, you know, Terry Francona keeps being quoted as saying all the right things, like, we want Danny to be able to pitch on a full tank. We don't care when he starts pitching. All those kind of baseball-y lines. And Salazar made his spring training debut today, and DirecTV did not record the game as I instructed it to. So I can't tell you what happened, but according to this headline, Danny Salazar can't get through two innings in Cactus League debut. So that doesn't sound real good. But again, it's his first time out. He hasn't pitched, I'm going to guess. He hasn't thrown a ball since probably he was taken out of the game last October against the Rays. And we discussed before the podcast started how I just have all winter thought it was silly to slot Danny Salazar in at the top of the Indians' rotation. The guy made 10 starts last year. And to say that, oh, the rotation's going to be Masterson, then Salazar, is a pretty audacious thing to say, I guess.
Yeah, it seems like it's putting a bit of pressure on the young lad.
Yeah, I think you just might want to move him back a little bit. I mean, at least to number three, you know? That seems to be the plan with Salazar, though, is that they're going to start him 2 weeks later, and he'll probably make his debut, I think it's April 8th. So, to me, that's a good idea. The Plain Dealer is just spilling a lot of ink on it, because I don't think they have anything else to talk about. And they don't want to talk that much about the actual competition for the last rotation spot, because there's not much drama. Carlos Carrasco and Josh Tomlin and even Aaron Harang are all pitching really well.
Right.
Even Trevor Bauer is pitching well.
I've heard Bauer looks great this spring.
Yeah, he's looked a lot better. His first start, he was pitching up in the zone a little. He needed a lot of pitches to get through the inning, although some of that wasn't entirely his fault. But he came out in his second start and worked the ball down more. His velocity is back up to where it used to be when he was at UCLA. He's even approached 100 a couple times. So, I mean, that's good to see. Yeah, and so the fifth starter battle, if you want to call it that, or I guess we shouldn't say fifth starter battle because that's going to be Danny Salazar. last starter battle, open slot battle, I guess.
Oh, I like that. That's good.
Open slot battle?
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, you could say that it's between Carrasco, Tomlin, Bauer, and Harang, but Bauer is not going to make the team.
Right.
I mean, he's not ready.
And if they just started revamping his delivery this season because, kind of like you said last season, they were, you know, coddling him and kind of almost letting him figure out that he couldn't do things the way that he was doing, it almost seemed like.
Right. I mean, I think from what they've been saying, that there was a point last season where they started retooling it in season, which is why they're giving that as the excuse for why his numbers were so bad. Now, whether that's just something to say, you know,
right,
or when that transition actually happened, we know it's happening now because you can see it. So I mean, Bauer is not ready. He, you know, and if he's making strides, he needs to go down to Columbus and work on repeating that delivery every 5 days over and over again.
Right.
If it all comes down to Carrasco, if Carrasco's pitching well, he's going to get the spot. I mean, it doesn't matter what any of those other people are doing. If Carrasco's pitching well, he's the guy. Because he has a higher ceiling than Tomlin. He has a higher ceiling than Harang, and Bauer's not making the team.
Right.
So, I mean, Carrasco's out of options. Tomlin has options, and Harang's someone who's trying to kind of revitalize his career for one last shot. You're not going to cut Carlos Carrasco to give Aaron Harang a last shot at kickstarting his career. And you're not going to send Josh Tomlin to the bullpen, which is what some people are talking about. He's your depth starter.
Right.
You know, if Trevor Bauer is really working on getting things figured out, you don't want to be jerking him back and forth between Columbus and Cleveland.
Right.
You know, Josh Tomlin's the perfect sixth starter because he just throws strikes, puts the ball out there, lets his defense do the work. You know, he has a very repeatable delivery. He can pitch a lot of innings. I mean, he's coming off Tommy John, but, you know, he'll still pitch probably almost 150 innings this year, I would say.
So, yeah.
If Cookie Carrasco has anything to say about it, this is pretty much over before it even began. Because Carrasco's looked really strong. And actually, the whole group has looked strong. Masterson, Kluber, McAllister, Carrasco, Tomlin, Bauer, and Harang have given up 8 earned runs over 40 innings.
Oh, wow.
So even though it's spring, again, I'd rather be discounting good numbers than bad numbers. You know, I'd rather be saying like, oh, it doesn't matter how well they do than being like, oh, it doesn't matter that they got shellacked again and again. And again,
because eventually it makes you wonder.
Because eventually, yeah, it makes you wonder. I'm trying to think what else is going on. Well, there's the Justin Masterson news.
About the contract, you mean?
Yeah, how he proposed a contract to the Indians.
Right, right.
Supposedly, he offered 3 or 4 years, and you know. Something around, what was it, 50 million?
Yeah, yeah.
And
I like how he's offering his services. They're not offering him a contract.
Well, it is, the silence is a little deafening, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it is one of those things where it's definitely a good buy on the years. But it's still a lot of money per year.
Right, right.
For a small market team, you know? I mean, 3 years and $50 million is, what's that? Hold on. I'm not good at math.
I mean, it's like
14
million?
16.7 million a year.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Right.
When your payroll is 80.
Yeah. That's I can tell you because we had a similar experience with AJ Burnett. That's right. Probably approximately 17% of your payroll.
Right, right. Now, I mean, if it was me, I would do it. If I was Chris Antonetti, I'd be sitting in front of Paul Dolan right now and be like, listen, this is as good as it's going to get. If you can't pony up this kind of money, what he really should be saying is maybe you shouldn't be the owner. Because this is what it costs to run a baseball team.
And to get a potential top of the rotation guy, that's what it costs.
Right. That's what I mean, though. I mean, if you want to be good,
right,
you need a top of the rotation pitcher. And this is actually a good deal for a top of the rotation pitcher. Again, not so much maybe on the average value, but on the years.
Right.
Because we talked about this a million times. What hamstrings teams like the Pirates and the Indians, in a lot of ways, in many cases anyways, is not the dollars, it's the years. You know,
right.
They can stomach paying someone $16 million as long as they don't have to pay them $16 million for the next 10 years.
Exactly.
And that's the benefit with Masterson. I mean, you're going to be buying, like we always talk about how with Robbie Cano's contract, for instance, the Mariners bought like two more good years and then like 8 years of decline.
Right.
Masterson's 28. You'd be buying 29,
30, 31. That's, hopefully right in the prime of his career.
That's when you want to buy someone, you know? You don't want to get someone when they're 34 for a 10-year contract.
Exactly.
Because all you did is you just bought 10 years of the slow death spiral. I mean, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're Greg Maddux. It's still the slow death spiral.
Right.
But the silence is deafening. That's kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah, that was kind of how, because when I looked at it initially, I thought, well, this seems reasonable. We should hear some more about this.
And then we haven't.
Just nothing.
I mean, Masterson's certainly saying all the right things, you know? Like, before he even said about the contract, he made a comment essentially saying, you know, I think we're going to find some way where I can stay in Cleveland. And then A couple days later, he reveals that he offered them this, not below market in money, but below market in years contract.
It was definitely a fair market deal. It was absolutely a fair market deal.
Yeah. And the interesting thing I saw someone pontificate about is that those 3 years or 4 years probably would make Masterson a nice chunk of money, making about $50 million, and get him to the next collective bargaining agreement. Where as we discussed last time, the qualifying offer situation will more than likely change.
Yeah.
And if you think about it that way, it's a pretty clever move on his part.
Yeah, make sure he's hitting the free agent market at the right time when that qualifying offer's gone.
Right, and he looks like a good guy, right? Gives his team a fair deal.
Hopefully he's outperformed his contract and he can set himself up for that cushy last 5 years of my career type deal.
Right, right, right. Because like you said, hopefully if all goes to plan, he's going to overperform for the next 3 years based on his contract. And then he'll be able to cash in that Robbie Cano deal where you buy one or two good years and like a bunch of years of the decline.
Right.
But he has nobody signed anything yet because Chris Antonetti's not calling him back. Chris Antonetti's light on his little phone just blinking.
Yeah.
He's just like, yeah, I'll get to that later. I don't want to have that conversation. I don't know. I guess the only other miscellaneous things, Vinny Pestano has made a few appearances, and the results have been positive. So if Vinny Pestano turns into the old Vinny Pestano, then nobody's going to miss Joe Smith.
Right.
That's pretty much the easiest way to look at it. And this bullpen that really is quite deep gets scary deep at that point because, you know, you've got Allen, Shaw, Pestano, Altman, Zepchinski, and you haven't even addressed any of the good young arms that are around or any of the invites that are in camp. You know, like they have Scott Acheson in camp, who's a guy Terry Francona loves. I mean, they're already starting like the media blitz that Scott Acheson's going to make the team in this kind of like Matt Albers role. And I mean, that's fine because CC Lee is probably going to come up at some point when someone gets hurt.
Yeah.
And you give Scott Acheson a month to see if he's still got it in the tank. And if he doesn't, you cut him and you call CC Lee up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how these things work, you know. But if Vinny Pestano comes back, the bullpen mafia is back in business, man. Forget about Chris Perez. Forget about Joe Smith.
Yeah, and what was he dealing with last season that he ended up admitting was an issue all year?
He had elbow tightness.
Elbow tightness. Yeah.
Which he developed in the WBC and tried to pitch with all year, and Mickey Callaway said that, you know, it wasn't so much his velocity because although he's a strikeout pitcher, he never had overpowering velocity. It was all his arm action.
Right.
You know, he's very deceptive. And when his elbow was hurting, he tried to compensate by throwing a little differently, and then you could see the ball a lot sooner. And before you know it, you're getting knocked around. And Pestano made that point in the article I was reading where he said, you know, last year guys were swinging late and fouling pitches off, or if instead of making light contact, they were making hard contact. And he said this spring, you know, instead of making light contact, I'm getting foul balls, and instead of foul balls, I'm getting swings and misses. So hopefully he's on the road to recovery. And then, of course, Carlos Santana, still working at third base.
Heard he looked a little stiff the other day.
You know, he made two errors so far this spring. I mean, I honestly think it's one of those situations where he's going to be under the microscope.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you had Jack Hanahan over there and he made two throwing errors, no one would say a word about it.
Right.
It wouldn't even come up. It wouldn't make it in the article. But everything Carlos Santana does at third base is going to get scrutinized. You know, and he had problems with poor footwork as a catcher, and oftentimes poor footwork leads to bad throws. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that still being a problem.
So right, right.
We'll see if he can get that cleaned up. It's going to get real interesting in a couple weeks because Terry Francona said in a couple weeks he'll begin, quote, moonlighting at catcher. So that's what I'm interested to see. One, I think in a lot of ways he's getting like a little bit of an a difficult road right now because he doesn't play third base every day.
Right, and he's just overly scrutinized there.
Right. And, I mean, when he was playing third base every night in the Dominican, he was looking good. You know, now when he plays it once every 3 days and he throws the ball in the bleachers, everyone's making a big deal about it.
Right, yeah.
But what I want to see is when he plays third base, say, back-to-back days, and then catches. Because I want to see how that goes. Because I am still, I don't think that that's a road you want to go down. I think if you want to platoon him with Lonnie Chisenhall, then when he's not playing third base, just have him DH.
Right. Don't start spreading Carlos a little too thin.
Yeah, I mean, how many gloves is this man going to have to pack? Third base, first base, catcher. I mean, he's going to need, like, a ball boy just to bring all his equipment. I don't know. I mean, and they were actually talking about this on the radio the other day. Tom Hamilton was saying how, you know, it's unclear, are they going to have Carlos Santana be their backup catcher? And it's unclear if he's not, who's going to
be
the backup catcher? But he actually made a fairly astute observation, I thought, which is that when it's time to make cuts, there's probably going to be some solid veteran catchers who get cut.
Right.
And it won't be that hard if you're not happy with Matt Traynor to go out and snag a guy. I mean, he might hit 240, but you're not planning on playing him every day.
Right.
You know,
by the way, we don't refer to him as Matt Traynor here.
Oh, Mr. Misty May Traynor.
Yes.
I think that's probably what they're considering. We'll see what happens here in about 2 weeks when people start getting cut. See if we can find somebody.
Yeah. There was one last thing I wanted to bring up before we just really quick touch on Detroit, which was one of our Twitter followers was asking about Tyler Sturdivant. Do we have anything to add on Sturdivant?
Well, I responded to his tweet, but Tyler Sturdivant has had many shoulder injuries or arm injuries over the last couple of years, and he missed all of last season, I think, due to shoulder surgery. He did appear in a winter league. I can't think off the top of my head which one it was, but he pitched, I think, 9 innings, struck out 10 batters, gave up 3 runs, I believe. So he had a very solid winter ball campaign for a guy who's been hurt for most of the last couple seasons.
Right.
He wasn't invited to Major League Camp because I'm going to assume that he's going to probably start an extended spring training and continue working back from that surgery. The thing about Tyler Sturdivant is he was an advanced bullpen arm before he got hurt, and that hasn't changed. I mean, health is his only concern.
Right.
If he's healthy, he's a legitimate major league bullpen arm now. I mean, he's been forgotten because he's been hurt, and guys like CC Lee and Preston Gilmett have been healthy. He's kind of in that Trey Haley vein where he was a legitimate option and then he's been injured and now it's kind of up in the air whether he can recover.
Yeah, just building back his value.
So okay. That's what Tyler Sturdivant's up to as far as I can tell.
Yeah. Tyler Sturdivant, shout out.
There you go.
Was that it for Cleveland? Anything else you want to add, or you want to talk about Detroit and some Erie Seawolves?
No, we can talk about Detroit. Nick
Castellanos. What's that?
Nick Castellanos.
Oh, Casty. I already got my Buck Knight season ticket package. Now that I'm living in Erie, now that I'm a homeowner in Erie and I'm like 10 minutes away from the ballpark, yeah, I'm going to a lot of Buck Knights.
There you go.
Going to a lot of Buck Knights. So let's first start out with Eugenio Suarez, who's been – he was with Erie last season. He logged 496 plate appearances in Erie last year. He had 122 in Detroit's high A. And I forget – who's their high A affiliate? Do you remember off the top of your head?
Oh,
Anyways, he was with their high A for 122 plate appearances before he got bumped up to double A. You know, posted decent numbers, 253, 332, 387, triple slash. Struck out about 20% of the time, walked about 10% of the time. But he's most noted for his glove. He's got a great arm, you know, slick fielder. So, you know, and he's demonstrating that he can at least keep up with the major league fastball this spring. So, you know, at 22 years old, Detroit probably has another serviceable major leaguer coming right from Erie. Nick Castellanos, probably the most notable former Erie Seawolf at this point, is just tearing the cover off the ball. He's hitting 385 this spring. He's 10 for 26, two doubles, two home runs. You know, again, you don't want to get worked up about spring training numbers, but it's nice to see that these guys are not going up there and getting overwhelmed.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's what you're worried about with these guys, you know, in their first taste. So it's definitely encouraging to see them not be overwhelmed.
Right. And then as far as players that you might see in Erie this season, and we'll have to confirm with Bob just to make sure, you know, as we get closer to the start of the season. But Steven Moya, who last year I believe he reached high A. I know he definitely hasn't, he hasn't been above single A. You know, he wasn't with Erie last season. But Moya is actually hitting really, really well this spring as well. I think he's 7 for 17 this spring. He's got two doubles, got a triple, you know, he's driving in runs. So he might be a guy to kind of keep your eye on as far as if you're in the Erie area. You know, there's a pretty good chance you're going to see Moya in Erie for some period of time this season. So, you know, he's one of those kind of like high ceiling guys, you know, tons of talent, I guess. So he's definitely worth keeping an eye on in Detroit's system. So again, we'll keep in touch with Bob and see where Moya ranks and everything, and where there's a good chance whether he'll be starting out in Erie this season or not, and where he'll go. But just some players to kind of keep an eye on, former and potentially future Erie Seawolves. So make sure you make it out to the ballpark, Jason. It's a howl of a good time.
There you go. And, you know, the thing is, like you're talking about these, like Castellanos and these guys not being overwhelmed. What will be interesting, and some of them you're not going to be able to tell because, as we talked about, they're going to get optioned out soon. But as the crowd thins, okay, and it's all major league caliber players left in camp, that's when it gets interesting to watch someone like Castellanos, because has he been, you know, getting a lot of hits off guys that he's faced in double A before?
Right.
You know, guys that got picked up off the scrap heap somewhere. You know, so it becomes more interesting when he has to face, you know, because he's going to get more at bats too. So when he faces Garrett Cole for the third time in a game, who wins that battle?
Right.
You know what I mean? Rather than he faced a different pitcher each time, and the one time it was Travis Banwart. I mean, like you said, it's always good to be good. It's much better to be putting up good numbers than bad numbers.
But yeah, it gives you a lot less to worry about.
Yeah, but it's even better to put up good numbers against good players.
Yeah. Absolutely. Anything else we need to touch on? I think we've pretty much got it all covered.
Yeah, I think that about does it. I
feel like we did a fairly thorough job today.
Well, we had a lot to cover.
Yeah. Ooh, lots to talk about. It's been a while. We're probably going to start going at least semi-regular here sometime soon.
Yeah, so, better.
Yeah, keep your ears to the ground. We'll let you know once we get back to that regular recording schedule. We'll have some of our bigger articles coming out. I know I've been kind of a bum lately, Jason. I said earlier, Jason's been putting me to shame with his article writing. Grad school's just consumed my life.
But I've been able to by writing one.
Yeah. Yeah, what does that say about me? Oh, that's shameful. Shameful. But we'll have our preseason predictions out. Our top prospects will be coming out. We'll also be having our new staff writer, Chris Bradley. He'll be contributing to us a little bit. So he'll be giving us a nice, interesting take on some local players to watch as far as the tri-state area is concerned. So definitely keep your eyes peeled to the site. Keep your ears to the podcast so we can fill you in on all that. And that's officially going to wrap it up for today. So if you want to check us out on the web, you can do so at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter @tristatebb. And check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
I sit on a throne of lies.
Jerk.